Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Mike Florio. Let's bring in Mike Florio here. He joins us on the program.
NBC Sports.
All right, Florio, I know you're probably busy.
Pro Football Talk.
Starts the day, he ends the day with Pro Football Talk. He is Mike Florio.
We have learned that an unvaccinated Aaron Rodgers has tested positive for COVID. Your thoughts?
Well, you know what? He's a big, fat liar. That's my first thought.
I wouldn't listen to some of those people out there, especially guys like Mike Florio.
Go to hell with your big brain. Ladies and gentlemen, Pro Football Talk's Mike Florio.
Mike Florio with Dan Bernstein and Leila Rahimi.
How are you, Mike?
On the Score.
Mike Florio joins us on the Score Hotline, brought to you by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. You can find him at Pro Football Talk, the creator of Pro Football Talk, and he's at NBC. He is with us now. Mike, how are you?
Doing great. How are you, pal?
Well, we're, you know, trying to make sense of this Bears hire, trying to figure out the parameters of his power, what happens next. But the first question I have for you is, how did it go down with the news now that the Vikings are hiring Kwesi Adofo-Mensah? What was the courtship like? Did the Bears beat out the Vikings for Ryan Poles, as some have reported?
Well, it's like free agency. If you can keep the guy from getting on the plane and going to his next stop, you dramatically enhance your ability to get the deal done. And instead of Poles leaving Chicago to go to Minnesota for interview number two, they decided to pull the trigger and get it done. And this is the first time we've seen in this cycle with three GM openings and now nine head coaching vacancies, and none of them have been filled. There's been no sense of competition among teams for the same candidate, no tug of war, no rush to the store to try to get the last of whatever before someone else can get it. And the Bears decided to get aggressive, to take what they wanted, and to keep the Vikings from potentially hiring Ryan Poles before they could. So, you know, it creates a nice little bright line in the division who got the better of the deal here, with the Vikings hiring Kwesi Adofo-Mensah from the Browns as their choice. And it doesn't mean that the Vikings were definitely going to hire Ryan Poles, but there is an impression there that the Bears beat them to the punch. At a minimum, the Bears kept them from having their full-blown second interview and making a decision between Poles and Adofo-Mensah.
And it was active rather than passive from the Bears' part, so it does show that they went out and got something that they wanted, which may make you feel better. I'm interested to know how you hear information on these guys after the fact, because I always laugh. You never hear bad stuff come out. You never hear a general manager having, oh my God, they hired that idiot? It's usually, at least, if not over the top positive, sort of blithely positive stuff about somebody assuming a place of power in the league. There's really no good reason for people to come out and start sniping at this guy behind the scenes. Do you ever hear bad stuff or muttering about such hires?
Sometimes if it comes from a place of jealousy by former coworkers or something along those lines, but in the media, and I laugh about this all the time, I already saw these superlatives being heaped upon Ryan Poles by people in the national media who may have no idea who he is. But part of the game is make it all positive, make the fans excited. It's part of what we're selling. And also it doesn't hurt if you rely on any access whatsoever to go over the top. And one of the things I've noticed more specifically than anything else, when a college coach comes to the NFL, there are some in the media who constantly act like this is the next Jimmy Johnson until proven otherwise. Because you know what? If he becomes the next Jimmy Johnson and you believed in him when he wasn't the next Jimmy Johnson, you get dibs on phone calls and interviews and whatever. So I'm very cynical about it, but I know how the game is played. The reality is this. You're going to have 9 new coaches, 3 new general managers. And ultimately, all 32 teams, Dan, could have a great coach and a great GM. All 32. Excellent. Perfect. They know what they're doing. You still have the ultimate zero-sum game of 272 regular season contests. Somebody's going to be 13-4, and somebody's going to be 4-13. And if you do it enough times, you get fired. And there's going to be turnover. It happens. Owners are impatient. So everybody can make a great hire in this cycle. And I doubt that anyone is going to say, oh, boy, they really screwed up. But then we go play the games. We move to a different phase where they're necessarily going to be bad teams and there's necessarily going to be turnover. And it's just part of what makes the NFL news cycle go around. Because by the time we're playing the games again, we will have long forgotten the perfunctory check the box. Bears did a great job hiring a GM. Bears did a great job hiring a head coach. And we all just keep moving forward.
I'm trying to be mindful of Bears' historical context without damning anyone involved unfairly. But I do think it's reasonable to look at the timing and the optics of the Ryan Pace hire. He was 37. John Fox had become available, and there was what appeared to be a hasty arrangement in which, while technically they said it was Ryan Pace's hire, after the years, we all eventually knew better, and we learned how this became his hire. That's how I'm watching the coaching hire now. I just played the tape of George McCaskey saying ultimately the decision on head coach will be his. And yet it would be in the Bears' best interest to let us know that now that Ryan Poles is in place, that this is his hire. However they're going to spin it, they've got finalists already. They've got second interviews already. How should we watch what happens next to inform us as to who's really in charge?
Well, Bill Polian is still in charge of the search. And as I said, I think on your air yesterday on the morning show, if they don't hire the people Bill Polian recommends and it doesn't work, Bill Polian will find a way to make sure the world knows that the Bears didn't hire the people that he recommended. And if they had, the Bears would be in a better spot right now. So, you know, you don't heap all the superlatives on Bill Polian at the press conference George McCaskey had a couple of weeks ago if you're not willing to do what he tells you to do. And ultimately, I think it needs to be the person the general manager wants. And let me be more specific about it. It needs to be the person that Ryan Poles believes at every level of his being will be someone with whom he can form a partnership premised on mutual respect, friendship, loyalty, and trust. Because, and I've used this analogy all day long, because we've been talking about these GM hires, whether it's Minnesota or Chicago. It's a three-legged race. Remember the old three-legged race where you take the right leg of one person, the left leg of the other, you tie it together, and they go run. You've got to be able to run. You've got to be able to sprint. And if you fall down, they both fall down. You cannot have a situation where if things go sideways, and they inevitably will at some point during a season, it will feel like the sky is falling. When the sky is falling, do the GM and the head coach come together and try to prop it up? Or does one of them start thinking, well, I'm not taking the fall for this. I've put a talented team together. The coach, what the hell is the coach doing with the team I put together? And the coach needs to ultimately trust that the GM won't be undermining the coach by whispering to Ted Phillips or George McCaskey or anyone else in a position of influence, I don't know what this guy's up to. You can't have that. GM and the head coach have to be bound together, fused at the hip, and ready to fight together and work together and thrive together or die together if things don't work out. So for that reason, even though it's ultimately George's decision, I want the person that Ryan Poles believes will be the right person to have the relationship that will thrive under fire, not survive under fire, but thrive under fire.
Is it too much to ask then right now that even if we presume the Bears are doing everything the right way, and this is a big presumption, but for the purpose of this question, let's say the Bears want to do just that, or they want to make sure that that happens. If they sit down right now and say to Bill Polian, Bill, thank you for your service. Here's a giant check. Now go back to the beach. And they've got these files, and they've got their Zoom interviews with coaches recorded, and they've got all the information, and they push everything across the table, and they say, Ryan, here's everything we know. You do with this as you see fit, and we will be here to answer any questions and be a sounding board for you. Is that reason? See, I don't think that's going to happen, but how much time could he possibly need to make a decision that important with as much information as he should have?
And that's an excellent point, Dan. And I think if the Bears want to get people locally to buy into Ryan Poles the way that I think they need to, this would be the perfect opportunity to say, now that we have Ryan Poles on board, we are perfectly confident that Ryan Poles can lead the search for the next head coach. We thank Bill Polian for his contributions, and we're going to move forward with Ryan Poles finishing the search and making the decision, because ultimately he's the one that's got to live with it, not Polian. Polian moves on to whoever he's going to consult for next year. Ryan Poles moves forward with the coach. And I'd like to think that they know who Ryan Poles wants to hire. These guys who become general managers, who work in front offices, they're always scouting players and they're always scouting coaches. They're always looking for that person that if I ever become a GM, who's my coach going to be? And they carry around a list. They have a working list. Here are the people that I would consider. Here's my first choice. Here's my second choice. Here's who I would trust, and here's who would trust me. It doesn't always work. Look what happened in Detroit when Bob Quinn became the GM. The guy at the top of his list was Matt Patricia. He kept Jim Caldwell for a couple of years, nudged him out the door. In comes Patricia, and it all blows up in their faces. But at least it blew up in their faces together. They both were gone when it all fell apart. But Patricia was Quinn's guy. And Ryan Poles comes into a situation without an interim coach to worry about. There's no relationship there that needs to be possibly salvaged. Who's at the top of his list? And I hope that the Bears hired Ryan Poles knowing who's at the top of his list and comfortable with hiring that person as the head coach. If you're not, you shouldn't have hired Ryan Poles to be your GM.
The idea of publicly announcing that Bill Polian's work is completed, I think, has tremendous value, because we didn't get that with Ernie Accorsi the last time around. It was everything was shadowy, and it took time. It took years for us to learn that what we initially thought was going on is what was going on, that it was kind of like, hey, Ryan, I know you're in charge, but maybe you just get to know John Fox a little bit. You guys have dinner. You good? Okay. You're good, right? You're good. Hire him. You like him, right? We know that's now how it went down. And then we got the great moment, like you say, this three-legged race. They both fell down when John Fox is standing with Mike Glennon at the draft night party, and all of a sudden the secret comes out that they're drafting Mitchell Trubisky. And then they're everybody sort of staring at each other, and we knew that there was a disconnect there. And to me, if there was an agreement on Justin Fields, that's going to be both the blessing of that unity, but the curse of the Bears saddling new people with something old.
Oh, I agree with you completely. And look, the mere fact that they weren't committed to giving Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy at least 2 years with Justin Fields present to try to make it work and let him develop, and they potentially ruin Justin Fields now by putting him on this conveyor belt where he goes from one coach to the next, mm-hmm. and hopefully the next coach will be able to develop him, and if that fails, then he moves on to the next one. And the next thing you know, the window's closed on his career. We look for signs of dysfunction. The fact that Pace and Nagy got fired after 1 year when they gave up next year's first-round pick to get Justin Fields, that in and of itself is dysfunctional to me, because it shows me the organization wasn't truly on board with these guys. So why would they have okayed the move to go get Justin Fields and trade up to get him? If you really have misgivings about whether you're going to continue with these guys, you tell them, no, we're not going to trade next year's first-round pick. We're not going to authorize it. So, you know, the question is, will the people responsible for past dysfunction get out of the way and let Ryan Poles and the head coach he would like to hire run the show? If the Bears want to be successful they need to be sufficiently self-aware to let George McCaskey be a fan, let Ted Phillips truly be involved only with the effort to get a new stadium, and let Ryan Poles run the football operation. If you're not willing to do that, then you've screwed this thing up before it even began.
How tantalized should we be over the potential departure of Aaron Rodgers, maybe even the departure of Tom Brady, and a completely reshuffled landscape in the NFC that gives a bit of renewed hope?
Well, I think right now Tom Brady is going to retire. I don't know that. But this all came up too quickly to not just be really odd and really unusual. And it almost feels like Twilight Zone-ish for me that others in the media aren't saying, wait a minute, this guy said multiple times in the 2021 season he's playing through 2022. And then he's going to decide what to do after that. How is all of a sudden the headline on ESPN, Tom Brady remains non-committal about playing next year? He was never non-committal. He was committal. Something happened. What is happening here? And I think the key was when he came out the other night on his podcast and said he doesn't want a farewell tour, I don't think he's coming back. Because if he comes back, even if he says I'm coming back for two more years, no one's going to believe it. And 2022 is going to be treated as the Tom Brady farewell tour. He's not going to be able to avoid that. I think he's gone. I think it's just a matter of him coming to terms with it and getting distance from the end of the season, and I think he is going to be gone. And I think Aaron Rodgers, right now I'd say he's not going to stay with the Packers, although I think his best bet is to stay. I don't think the Packers are going to do enough to convince him to stay, and we start looking for next destinations if he asks to be traded, and if they renege on their unwritten promise to trade him and unenforceable promise to trade him, that's when he retires too. But I don't think it's going to come to that. And I don't think Aaron Rodgers wants it to come to that, because he's not going to want to go into Canton the same year Tom Brady does, because that's when he becomes second fiddle to Tom Brady.
Let's look at the games real quick. I'm getting this feeling, and it's kind of cool, but the Bengals are getting this America's team vibe. They're kind of the new young hotness right now, and I'm okay with that. Like, go ahead and enjoy whatever Bengals bandwagon you can, because that's what the young quarterback's supposed to look like and supposed to act like.
This is Joe Montana 40 years later, and I remember vividly, you know, back in the 70s, as we were starting into a new decade, it was Cowboys, Raiders, Steelers that kind of ran the league. And we didn't have anyone crash the party. Go back and look at the Super Bowl winners. It was Cowboys, Raiders, Steelers, Dolphins all through the 70s and into the early 80s. Then comes the 1981 season. Here come the 49ers and Joe Montana. And when they beat the Cowboys in the NFC Championship, that was the shot. That put everyone on notice that it doesn't have to be the way that it was in the 70s, that maybe some of these other teams can rise up. And I feel like that's what the Bengals are doing. They beat the Chiefs in the regular season. And I hope that the Chiefs have realized that you can't single cover Jamar Chase if you want to try to outscore the Cincinnati Bengals. I don't know that they're ready, but you know what? I didn't think they were ready last week. This is going to be a hell of a one to pick, because all signs point to the Chiefs after what they did last week. But I can't help but wonder, and I think back to the Minneapolis Miracle game from 4 years ago. When you have one of those pull a rabbit out of your hat or some other southerly orifice type of a win in the divisional round, can you really recover from that in a week and get yourself into the right mindset? I think the Vikings had a letdown against the Eagles, and I think the Chiefs may have a letdown against the Bengals. The question is, can the Bengals take advantage of it long enough to deliver the death blow to the Chiefs? Because if they had a letdown against the Steelers for a quarter and a little bit more, and then the next thing you know, they score 42 points.
The way you ask that, too, is any 49ers fan is going to think, oh, geez, like, talk about pulling something out of somewhere. You can't replicate that. That's not a recipe for NFC championship victory. It's like, well, you know, we're going to just get a blocked punt, and the other team is inexplicably going to spend 55 minutes not scoring. Like, they've got to have a different plan if they're going to want to upset a much better team.
Oh, you're absolutely right. And I think the fact that the 49ers have beaten the Rams six straight times, at a certain point it works against you. At a certain point you've run out of tricks that you've used to overcome the opponent that you continue to master. At some point, little brother is going to figure out how to beat big brother at ping pong, and that's what Sean McVay is trying to do this week. And his team on paper is better across the board, and they had a 17-point lead against the 49ers, with the division title on the line for the Rams and a playoff berth on the line for the 49ers, and they blew it. You know, what fascinates me about single elimination high-stakes football is that mistakes happen every week in the regular season. but they're different when you get to the postseason. That mistake creates a much greater momentum swing potentially. And, you know, it's the moment in at the end of Back to the Future, and I apologize if I used this last week. I ended up using it in several different spots. But it's at the end of Back to the Future when Crispin Glover, playing George McFly, curls up his fist and swings it at Biff and just happens to connect. I think that's what happened to the Packers. And it started with Mercedes Lewis fumbling the ball when the Packers were driving to go up 14-0. Because I think if it goes 14-0 in the first quarter of that game, 49ers are done. But that was the first moment that George McFly caught Biff off guard. And I think when that happens, it kind of takes on a life of its own and it evens things out. So that's what the Bengals need to do. But even then, it's not going to be enough because we saw the Steelers do that to the Chiefs. We saw the T.J. Watt moment where they go up 7-0, but the Steelers didn't have the offense to back it up. See, the Bengals do. If the Bengals can knock the Chiefs wobbly early, maybe they do have enough offense to continue to keep it going and somehow steal the win from the Chiefs. And they're going to have – who's going to pick the Bengals? Who really is going to have the guts to pick the Bengals this week? I think that's going to play into the Bengals' hands. It won't surprise me if they find a way to pull it off.
There you have it, Mike Florio. I know we're excited for what some people think is the best football weekend of the year. We will talk about it next week.
Thanks, pal.
It's Mike Florio. Next up, Cody Decker has baseball thoughts. David Ortiz is in the Hall of Fame, despite rampant steroid allegations and others with other rampant steroid allegations are off the ballot. I don't know. That's just the way stuff works, depending on how nice you are and where you play and other extenuating circumstances. Cody will give us his thoughts on that and on the voting and on the negotiations in the ongoing baseball lockout. We will warm up with some baseball talk briefly next on The Score.
Bases loaded. Two out.
And now he's a Hall of Famer. There are a lot of people who are better at baseball than he was who are not Hall of Famers, and so it goes. We try to separate out the whys and wherefores of the politics of glory, as Bill James once called them, with our next guest, Cody Decker, who is on Twitter at Decker6. Host of Down the Line with Cody Decker, the former major leaguer and longtime professional baseball player, is with us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. And he's also with us on Twitch. If you want to get a look at twitch.tv/Chicago670, The Score. You know, Cody, I know we've talked about it before, but I used to feel really, really strongly about a lot of this, and I was always a small hall guy. You had to be pretty special and keep the steroid users out. And now it's a museum in upstate New York, and I think I'm too old for it being worth my time to get angry about some of this stuff. But here we are. What does it mean that the vote came down the way it did?
What does it mean that the vote came down the way it did? Absolutely nothing.
Right.
It makes me think that this entire museum is a sham and it's just a tourist trap now. The fact of the matter is, I've had this argument on Twitter a lot lately, and I just simply don't comprehend it. I don't get anyone who's sitting here saying, "Oh, keep the cheaters out right now." Then you best not look at who's in the Hall of Fame. Yvonne Rodriguez is in the Hall of Fame. Mike Piazza is in the Hall of Fame. Craig Biggio is in the Hall of Fame. There's many rumors about all of them, and far more than someone like, say, Barry Bonds. It's called the steroid era, not the Barry Bonds might have done steroid era. So the fact that we're just penalizing Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. Although last night, Roger Clemens wrote out a tweet that was the most gracious and lovely tweet I've ever read from pretty much anybody. You know, it's really just a joke, because if you really take down and break down career war, if you were to, like, subtract Alex Rodriguez's career war from Barry Bonds' career war, you would get a David Ortiz.
That is absolutely true. We were trading that information. I think it was Jeff Sullivan, formerly of FanGraphs, and now is working in Major League Baseball, actually sent that out a while ago. And to me, it's the way we cast narratives, the way we say who's a villain and who's not. And I take full responsibility for it. Like when I was younger and dumber about it, that I was like that too. And it felt right. But when you say David Ortiz's name was in that leaked Mitchell report group that may or may not have been positive tests, same goes for Sammy Sosa. And the same eye test of, well, Sammy didn't start hitting home runs until, well, David Ortiz had 58 through his age 27 season, and then all of a sudden he had 480 or whatever he did. So really, when we can talk about Bonds and Clemens, I think the comp is probably Sosa for how you decide to talk about things, what constitute properly politicized non-denial denials, and that's where we see some of these arbitrary differences voted on.
And it's very clear there's things we do not know about Sosa, because the fact of the matter is that we're not even talking about Sammy Sosa in any way, shape, or form in the same vein that we are the Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. Sammy Sosa hit 600 career home runs. There's like four guys in the history of Major League Baseball that did that, but he's not spoken about in the same vein as these other guys. There's something there, and I don't know what it is.
I also understand that there was a time before Major League Baseball, especially great Major League Baseball players, made multi-generational wealth, where the idea of being able to put HOF on your signature was a major financial windfall. Of being able to go to conventions or however you would market autographs or memorabilia, that was a life-changing financial windfall for former players. That's not the case anymore. You talk to a lot of former players. Why is that enshrinement still important? Or maybe for somebody like Curt Schilling or someone else, maybe it doesn't carry the same cachet as it used to at all.
I think over these last 10 years, based on the controversies, based on the eras that we're just trying to pretend didn't exist, I think it's just watered down the entire thing. Look at the record books, for instance. You know, Major League Baseball probably covets its records more than any other sport, yet we hold a harsher magnifying glass over that league because of the steroid use, yet football is over here smashing records, and everybody gets a 5-game suspension that gets buried under the rug for any performance-enhancing drug use. Yet those records are not, you know, looked at the same way as Major League Baseball records. So I think it's just, once Barry Bonds broke the home run record, everyone just got angry. And next thing you know, everyone's just being punished for an entire era. I mean, Bud Selig is in the Hall of Fame, the man that oversaw the steroid era. The best player who ever lived, not in the Hall of Fame. I simply don't get any of this.
And what is always top of mind for me, for those of us who have been around the game at any level forever, would be the use of amphetamines in whatever form, whether it's the high-octane pot of coffee or whether it's what Pete Rose used to say, put the hustle in Charlie Hustle, or whether it's Willie Mays and what was known as red juice forever, that idea of being there every single day, of just being able to answer the bell, more so than bulking up and looking like a cartoon character, a superhero, was the power of the performance enhancement of those drugs. And those hallowed halls are filled with people who were able to play every day because of that help.
Yeah, I mean, I won't mention the name, but there is an old school baseball player that I was around a lot in my lifetime, and he told me a story about the one time he took greenies, and he, you know, described the experience. He's like, it's basically just speed, and everyone was taking them like they were M&Ms. It was part of the game, just like steroids was part of the game. And it drives me nuts that people are, you know, don't look at the amphetamine era as the same thing as the steroid era, which, by the way, it is.
Mm-hmm. And some were arguing, and some have successfully argued, that when it came to the counting stats, to compiling those career numbers, to being able to get through the grind of 162 over 6 months, that it was even more of an effect than just having a guy go from, say, 20 home runs to 30 home runs over time. And that's obviously something to be argued, maybe different place, different time, but I think it's reasonable and underpins everything we're talking about. Meanwhile, MLB and MLBPA are at the bargaining table exchanging what appear to be substantive proposals at this point. And whenever the owners want to end the lockout, they can end the lockout. So the fact that they're talking, the fact that they're not screaming at each other and slamming doors and sending out opposing press releases, I take as a better than bad sign at this point. What do you take it as?
I take it exactly that. I actually think it's a good sign. The fact that they met 2 days in a row and that they're actually making substantial progress and that sides are making concessions left and right, which is actually a very good thing. The way I see this, there's no one that's going to walk away from the CBA completely happy, which tells me that it has the opportunity to be a good CBA. The goal for every single contract negotiation is that both parties basically leave completely dissatisfied. That is the only way this is going to work. And I think that's what we're going to get to. I'm just hoping we can get it done before spring training, because the moment the CBA is done, we're going to see about 50 free agents signed, and it's going to be madness. I cannot wait.
I'd actually heard the term compromise defined as adverse parties reaching a mutual point of disappointment and satisfaction. And I think that makes absolute sense in this case. It also has, it struck me how easily the players have come off of some of their demands. It appears that $100 million, the merit pool money, the counter was $10 million, and I don't know what they are actually asking for their real number, but what was the level of padding? Like, had they started at $200 million and backed it down to get $75 million, I'm just wondering how much wiggle room there is in what's the real number when you start talking about the graduated minimum, and as those numbers are inching closer together, I always wonder, did they start high enough?
I don't know, and I don't even know what the goal that they're trying to attain to get that number two is. Like you said, $100 million, and they come back with $10 million. We're clearly far off, so it sounds like Major League MLBPA should have gone a little bit higher. But hey, listen, at the end of the day, I think that the owners have the inside track on a lot of this. You know, something that the Players Association was so terrified of the last CBA was something along the lines of wearable technology, something like Whoop bands and Apple watches. And the fact of the matter is, they don't need wearable technology to get those type of stats and numbers from every single player. They have Track Hawk on the field, they have Statman, they have everything out there that can really track everyone down to a cellular level. So really, it's all about coming down to the revenue sharing, in my opinion. And when they get down to the revenue sharing and taking care of all this contract manipulation that they've been putting out there with all these new rules, I think they'll be in a much better place. But really, at the end of the day, this is all going to be about revenue sharing.
Honest question from a player's perspective. When it comes to missing spring training games, my experience around players, especially with some split squad longer bus rides, depending on if it's Cactus League or Grapefruit League, that now that the owners have built these beautiful spring training parks, and now that you can pay $50 for a ticket and concessions are full price and they're selling all this stuff, have we gotten to a point where now the owners may actually miss spring training games more than the players?
Maybe. And that I will tell you always, because the players actually don't like spring training that much. Spring training is far too long, in case you don't know that. I'll give you an example. As a player that would go to spring training with pitchers and catchers, even though I wasn't an everyday catcher, I showed up every spring training around February 15th. That is nearly 2 months of spring training for me, and I don't need that much spring training. It really gets good when the games start getting going, but really you only need about 2 weeks worth of games. A full month worth of games is a bit much, especially for the players that know that their jobs are already secure. So I think the players really don't care how much spring training they miss. But yes, it's going to hurt the owners. It's going to hurt the teams if spring training doesn't happen. Because if you go out to Arizona, the Cactus League, that place is jumping in Phoenix all March long. It's actually awesome. If you guys haven't had a chance to go to spring training, you got to check it out in Arizona, not Florida. Florida sucks.
Oh, we have. But you know what else is different now and really obvious is, in previous work stoppages, you would see videos of players gathered together at a high school field, throwing a ball around, or somebody in their backyard, and everybody likes how homespun some of those videos now. But I don't care where you are. I don't care if you're in Chicago or El Paso or Las Vegas or Fort Wayne. There is a place for you to go that's got Rapsodos, that's got Edgertronic cameras, that's got catchers, that's got every measure and every opportunity for you to do real big-time, high-end practice without having your affiliated professional facility available to you. That's a game-changer as far as I'm concerned. The number of players who can't just pretend to stay in shape, but can not only stay in shape, but have printouts and readouts on their phone of every bit of data they need.
It's incredible what's actually available to people. And yeah, you don't need to be a part of a major league organization to get all these numbers. You just got to know where to look. And I got to say, the big problem with this is kind of people misinterpreting these numbers and misinterpreting how to get the information done. And there's a lot of charlatans out there who are taking advantage of a lot of people by saying, I got the numbers, I have everything you need. And really, they just have no idea what they're doing. So it's a combination of taking all that technology and finding the right people who know how to make it digestible to the average person.
But it's there for these guys, and if a team says, well, we're going to keep you locked out, like, you know what, that's fine. I'm in shape. I know exactly what I'm throwing. I know the exact movement on my slider, where I want the horizontal tilt on all of this stuff, where previously they needed their facilities open to know all that stuff. The fact that they now don't gives them new leverage.
Huge and huge leverage, because again, there's been reports that spring training is basically happening year round for the offseason right now for the Cubs, having minor leaguers there at the camp the whole time. That does not need to happen. Anyone can go to multiple facilities. Hell, in El Paso, there's a facility right here where people can go to and get all these digital readouts, everything they could possibly know. Like I said, it's down to the cellular level at this point. There's not a single thing that every team doesn't know about their players.
Cody Decker, always great checking in. I'm going to let you get back to your warm weather. And I imagine you turn the camera around and I just picture like everybody hanging out of the giant pool where you are.
No, I'm just at a coffee shop hanging out. I'm trying to raise money for a nonprofit, get kids into college through baseball and softball. Anyone want to help me out? Check me out on Twitter.
There it is, at Decker6. Cody, thank you. Be well.
Take care.
That's Cody Decker. Next up, the Midday Midway. I have two stories out of Florida. One, I'm going to ask you, and I'm trying to compile this list as we speak. If you fish, what is the strangest thing you've ever actually reeled in? And this, I mean actual fishing. This is not magnet fishing where some guy catches a World War II bomb and blows his arm off, or you know, where somebody actually fishes a rubber boot out of the... What is the oddest thing you've ever actually hooked, snagged, whatever it may be, and reeled to the surface? Just think about that as we get to our next story, and also an incident at Waffle House. That's next on The Score.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel
the Midday Midway with Bernstein and Rahimi. Middays 9 a.m. to noon on The Score.
We are at the Midday Midway point of the Midway of the week, meaning it's all downhill from here. This is, we are officially, as far as I'm concerned, heading into the weekend after the Wednesday Midday Midway, and that's what this is. We talked about the Bears hiring of Ryan Poles and all that it meant. We listened back to what George McCaskey said on January 10th when he said that ultimately the decision on general manager and head coach would be his. And that is how we are watching very closely how the Bears handle now the public description of the responsibilities involved with this next phase, what they say before, what they say after, and what they said going into this. How this is handled is going to matter. I'm hopeful that Ryan Poles has an opportunity to meet with the media and present himself by himself as the leader of the football side of this organization. A Florida man was arrested for allegedly causing a disturbance at a Cape Coral Waffle House over the way his bacon was cooked, according to a report. You better cook the effing bacon right, Martin Jose Alvarez is accused of yelling. Police said Alvarez was upset about how his bacon was delivered. The Tampa Free Press reported Alvarez is accused of shouting racial slurs at the workers and resisting officers until they threatened him with a taser. I guess they didn't have to use it. They just threatened him. Alvarez, 28, is facing charges of disorderly intoxication, resisting an officer, and simple assault. He is currently held at Lee County Jail. Look, we've all seen the unhappy Waffle House customer. Many of us, occasionally, depending on the quality control involved, have been the unhappy Waffle House customer. There's a way that you deal with it, a way that you don't, and usually depending on which friends are with you and what time of night or early morning it is, they will shut you up or hand you something to eat or move you off to the side before it escalates. And I'm just not at that time of night. How much do you have to care about the doneness or lack thereof of your bacon? It's bacon. It's bacon. They gave you bacon. Enjoy your bacon. Life is better. It's okay. Everything's probably fine. And when all is said and done, it's not worth it at that point. You got to just take the W on that one.
Yeah, maybe the racial slurs are a little too much there.
That's a little too much. Yeah, I think once the undercooked or overcooked bacon has you moving to the point of racial slurs, you probably have other issues involved. So the texters have lit things up with the odd things they've caught while fishing, and all believable to me. Where here, this is a 815 in the Kankakee River. I reeled in a bra. Okay. The 630 says fishing in the Caspian Sea region caught a dead fox. It's all a problem. The 815 says reeled in a bag of garbage. And some of these I have also done where I have caught the occasional bullfrog, specifically while using a beetle spin. That there are bullfrogs that will jump out of the reeds and will grab a beetle spin when you're going after bass. Listen, it says a bright red pair of panties. Now, I've caught a spider crab. I have caught a fully engorged blowfish that appears on the surface of the water and whoop, with the basketball size, with the big spines and everything.
Same.
And I have caught a sponge, a big natural giant. And I thought I was into something. I thought it was a Goliath grouper when I got this thing on there. Like, oh, this is big. Are you sure? Are you sure it's not a snag? It's not a snag. It's coming up. It's coming up. And they congratulations, you've caught a sponge. Well, we're all outdone. Because a man fishing at a lake in Polk County, Florida, reeled in the body of a 40-year-old man, according to police. That's a hell of a picture, right? Hold it up. Hold it close to the camera to get the size illusion. Two men were fishing in Lake Stella. One of them cast his line and hooked something heavy. Upon reeling the line in, the fisherman noticed the man's body and called his father, who came over to confirm it was a body. What? Dad, what's this? That's a dead guy. Thanks. Thanks so much. You need help. You really helped to confirm it. And it was identified as a local man who had recently returned to the area. Now, here's what's weird. The victim appeared to be in the water for 1 or 2 days. That I understand needing help for a body that had been in there, like the skeletal remains of something that maybe you're not quite sure. But if it's 2 days and you can see the guy's wearing Levi's, you're pretty sure that what you got there, right? That it's not some new species of Florida fish or a crossbreed with a gator or something like that. No other information has been released, and they're asking that anyone with information or who happened to witness anything in the area of Lake Stella over the past weekend is asked to contact the Auburndale Police Department. So you can get on with that. But so you figure a couple days, waterlogged, I don't know, 150 pounds or so. Like, you know you're into something that's moving around. We've all caught a log that's been heavy, and you know it's not fighting. And sometimes you get, like, the fake side-to-side movement. That happened to me with a snapping turtle once, where you're...
Oh, me too.
Really?
Yes. Scared the hell out of me. Because it came up out of the water when we pulled it.
Yeah.
Hissing.
Oh, yeah.
Loud. Really upset.
They're not happy.
Right.
And they're prehistoric things. And the other thing is, because of local laws, ideally, you know, if it's not an alligator snapper, an actual common snapper, not endangered, if you know somebody who knows how to clean one, I mean, that's living, man. That's the good stuff there, if somebody knows how to prepare it. But I don't know what you're allowed to do, and there are so few people around here who would know how to prepare it. But that's pretty special stuff there to eat.
I never thought about eating a snapping turtle.
No?
No.
And you haven't been in New Orleans. Because you come back from there a changed person once you have been introduced to the Get to anywhere you go. If you when you go to New Orleans, wherever you are, get turtle soup, no matter what.
And drunk.
Well, later or at the same time, but
yes.
Whether it's Commander's Palace, K Paul's, Arno's, Palace Cafe, any of the Brenham restaurants, turtle soup is an absolute must. And the way it's done down there is, I don't know what else they put in it that is absolute magic, but it is something. And that is the Midday Midway. That leads us to a great day to bring back Hub Arkush with his thoughts on the Bears and what is happening now with another general manager hire being made in the NFC North. But we will see where the Bears go, because next up is either people talking or hiring a coach or both or neither. Might happen a day. We'll get the latest from Hub on the Score.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.